Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and this is the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters Radio. Again, I am here with my buddies Jack and Wayne. My name is Gwen, and I'm in Florida. Today, our guest is a candidate for state senate. Her name is Deborah S. Wright, and that's a W-R-I-G-H-T. And before we get into conversation about her platform and the necessity of voting her into our state senate here in Florida, we're going to do just a short recap of the week, which was, you know, Jack, I think you'll appreciate this. I heard this week. It's a quote by Winston Churchill, who said, democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the rest.
Yeah, I've heard that before. That's very true and very ingenious.
Prefacing that, I want to say on the air and for posterity, as they say, I would really like to say that for the first time in so many years, I was very proud of House Democrats in Washington, D.C. this week. John Lewis and his buddy from Maine, Ms. Clark, they put together something we haven't seen. It's never been done before. And I even saw my own congresswoman, who I'm not too hot on, but seeing her in the camera feed and knowing what she was doing, her name, by the way, is Lois Frankel. She's the Democrat from my district. I actually tweeted her and said, you know what? Good job. And there's no saying, according to Ms. Pelosi, there's no saying that they won't take it up again when they get back, which I think is absolutely fabulous, because there's a time and place to be obstinate.
And of course, you know, Paul Ryan had to make a big meaningless statement about, oh, there's a proper way to do things and this isn't it and all that nonsense. And then he abruptly closed down the House. What an absolute jerk. I have no time whatsoever for that arch-conservative Paul Ryan. He drives me crazy.
But in the midst of it all, our president's approval numbers are climbing.
That's good news.
Because he's back out there kicking the tires and lighting the fires. People are listening to him.
Right.
And I think we have to take a look at that, because what he's actually saying is that we have to look up and, smell the roses. It's like we were saying before, you have to vote, which reminds me, over half of the Bernie supporters are on board with Clinton. Half of his team has come over to the Clinton team.
There will be more, too. This isn't going to be a Bernie or bust year. It's going to be a Hillary gets elected and beats Trump year. That's what it's going
to
be.
Tambourine has to be constantly shaking here, because
Agreed.
I give you Brexit on that one. The prima facie example of Trump being elected in the United States is
you can't assume anything in an election. You have got to do your duty and vote, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. You've got, no matter how certain or uncertain things may be, you've got to vote. It's your right and your responsibility.
A lot of these people will vote, and they'll vote for Jill Stein, which, you know, okay, fine. They voted. That's, you know, I've been with her for a long time. Y'all know this. And I am going to toot her horn today. She was in the Gay Pride March in New York City by surprise with Reverend Sharpton and de Blasio. And I think that speaks very well of my gal. Anyways, but in the midst of all this, before we wrap up this week review thing, and we're doing pretty good. We're still 4 minutes in. the intolerance and isolation and intimidation and racism and self-aggrandizing that the presumptive GOP candidate did this week was pretty, I mean, I thought it was pretty over. He went over the top. You realize. And,
always.
And the damn news people haven't even spun this one out. What he said this week, he reduced the African American and Latino communities in whole, in mass, in this country. He reduced them to low wage job proportions in his commentary.
Yeah,
and,
that's how he really believes too. This guy,
and
he has no business even considering a run for president.
How does that not scream white supremacy?
It is. It is.
I mean,
yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it's so old fashioned and out of place with the modern world. That guy, he's a relic. He's a bad relic.
Has he looked at society right. in general? And better yet, has he looked at the faces of the many people who are filling offices of service, and I mean leadership service, in political in political presence throughout this country? Is he that blind? And are these about George will quit the Republican Party? I'm lying.
Wow. That's incredible. You know what's right amazing, there, too? You know, you would think Trump being a so-called big, good, profitable businessman would appeal greatly to the business community. No way. There are tons of business people who have come out support Hillary over him.
This guy is a chiseler. Do you know how many small businesses he's put into receivership?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's climbed on the backs of those small.
Hey, Glenn, let me just interject something here real quick. Okay. I just was tweeting back and forth, with Professor Ron Feynman. And one of the things I stated with him was, the platform this year should not be, and I'm speaking as a Republican on this, it cannot be, we need to return back to the ashes of what this country was. We're going to make it great again of what it was. No, you have to light the fire to pass on the values of what made us great and continue to make us great. We have to live in the world that we are in right now. We can't go back to the good old days, like Miles Mabley said, right? I was there at the good old days. They weren't that good. You know, it's all about passing on the fire and the value of that to move this country forward.
We have to restore what was good that has been disabled, and we have got to renew and expand that which has been curtailed and phased out. I'm speaking specifically about very good New Deal programs, which have been weakened to the point of almost extinction, and we've got to resurrect those, and it's the only sensible thing for creating good jobs, for creating a social safety net that actually works and actually takes care of people the way it used to do and has been slowly but surely disemboweled by Republicans like Paul Ryan and the rest of that crew.
Well, a lot of Democrats have a
hand in that. Too. Well, they've been influenced by bad Republicans.
Into introducing Deborah White, Deborah Wright. Jeez, Deborah, kick me. who is our guest today? And she's running for state senate in my state, the state of Florida, which needs more and more progressives, even independents, but that are progressive, but get rid of the, oh my God, the fiasco of Republicans in this area. Now, Deborah, can I ask you a question? Are you in what people would consider the I-4 corridor?
Yes, I am. I certainly am.
Tell us about yourself. Why are you running? Why are you running?
Well, I'm running because I really feel that the people of Florida, and especially District 22, which is a newly formed district with the new redistricting in Florida, deserve some representation. We have had someone who has been in Tallahassee, but I'm not sure if the motives and the certainly the actions in which reflect what she has done has seemed as though they were not what the people wanted. And so I want to go to Tallahassee to represent District 22 because I know for one thing, one of the things that we face as a major problem in our nation is education. And with over 40 years of experience from the classroom to the boardroom and with our EDS or educational specialist, and I've done everything I tell people all the time except drive a bus in a school, I'm most qualified to sit and make decisions and considering the fact that my opponent is going to be the chair of the Higher Education Committee.
Ooh.
And has no formal training, and looking at her bio, I don't think she has, if she has a college degree, I would be surprised.
Wow.
So it's
oh my.
A little strange for us to, it seems like we're defeating the purpose with, as we tell kids that they need to matriculate at a college, and yet and still we go put somebody over our education committee in Tallahassee who doesn't even have a college degree.
How many terms has she spent in that position?
How did she get in the position?
Or how many terms has she spent in that position?
She's an incumbent. Only 1 year as senator. She came in as in the House of Representatives. She took the seat from her husband. Her husband was there first,
and then she took the seat
after her husband left.
Okay, well, I would say her incumbency isn't all that strong, so that's a big plus for you. And you should just hammer away at her as much as you can on the education thing. You have a clear advantage there.
Yes, well, I think I do. I mean, absolutely, in regards to I don't know everything, but this is my area of expertise, and
right.
I certainly know where the – hey, listen, I know where the bodies are buried, and
yeah,
I know where those issues are that need to be attended to in our state.
Has she given any indication of where she stands on the recent gun control controversy? Is she a typical Republican and supports the NRA all the way?
Mostly, and all of the things that I've been able to find, she has supported the Republican Party issues and whatever it goes along with.
Let me interject here because, as I told you, Deborah, earlier, many in my family, not only my immediate family, but also my cousins and stuff, are all in the education profession. And the NRA that has convinced people that teachers need a gun at their desk, the teachers should be carrying in the classroom.
Oh, dear.
I'm speaking from experience. I knew teachers that I wouldn't give a ruler to, much less a damn
gun. I agree.
Yeah,
there you go.
I agree. I certainly think that we've gone to the extreme. I know there's a sense of panic, but someone needs to have some wisdom and take the time to sit down and to sort through this, because I think that would be a travesty of justice, not only to the teachers, but also to the children. Because you know children are going to be children. They're inquisitive. And while you're standing there teaching social studies, they're over there deciding how they're going to get over in that locked drawer and get to that gun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
So I think that I would much rather be able to sleep at night and know that there's not a gun in a classroom. And as you said earlier, as much as we screen and try to find out all of the issues around people, nobody's perfect, but there are some people in classrooms that necessarily may not need to have a gun in their hand.
That NRA position is so ridiculous. Even in the Wild West, when guns ruled the day, even more so than today, or at least as badly as today, they never had guns in the classroom.
Yeah,
what an insane idea.
The old school arm was not packing a Colt 45, was she?
Deborah, I have to ask you, wouldn't that be I'm sorry, people. My connection went off. I have to ask you, on an issue like that, which certainly you will deal with in the state Senate, this gun situation, it's more in your lap right now, favorably, isn't it, than it would be in the Republicans? I mean, especially in your district at this point. I mean, I know people in Orlando, especially in the LGBTQ community, who are very active and are very motivated right now to see Republicans out of office because of this gun issue.
I must say, as the candidate, that's not the only issue in which it concerns me. And my opponent has she brought the ruling forth in regards to students who have significantly cognitively disabled students, meaning those students who have other disabilities, perhaps classified as learning disabled or educable mentally handicapped, must now take algebra, science, and high school English, and we no longer have the special diploma. And I think that's a travesty to justice. These are our weakest children in our society. And if we're going to put that kind of pressure on these children, I think that this is the kind of decision making that you don't need someone outside of education making. It's just as though they would take me and put me in a hospital operating room doing heart surgery and ask me to make the decisions as to what needs to be done.
Good point. Good point.
It's a more important issue for you and where you're coming from and what your expertise are. I get that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What other issues, what other points, contra to your opponents, do you hold? I know I have a friend who worked for a long time as an administrator in the school district down here in South Florida in Palm Beach County. And one of the big issues, and even my sister when she was raising her son, was all of the testing that goes on.
Yeah.
Can you bring some clarity to that for us about the
testing? Sure. I support testing when testing is measuring for the purpose of change or giving us adequate information in which we can better do something to develop that child. But we've gone outside the boundaries. It's out to the point it's a crisis in that people are testing every day. Kids are not being taught. They're being tested or assessed.
Right.
The word they call assessment. I've come through the era. I was a part of the education, the whole genre of the changing from the FCAT in Florida when Governor Jeb Bush was there. And I think his intentions for accountability were good. But for some reason or another, and especially in America, we just tend to go overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And we are at the point now we're destroying schools morally. We're destroying teachers professionally, and it's causing more havoc and heartache in the schools than it is good. So I'm concerned about, I think that we need to go back to somewhat some local control in regards to what is taught, what is tested, but however, have a state test, but don't have people competing against each other, but getting that information so that they can see how they can better improve their system.
Why did they institute these boundaries, these parameters with the testing? Was it about allocation of funds, or was it about what is the basis?
It stemmed from Bush's No Child Left Behind nonsense, didn't it?
It really came in with in the state of Florida. It came in with Jeb Bush with the accountability, the A-plus plan.
Okay.
And he started putting money on when you made gains. And it helped schools, because I've always worked in schools that were below the bar. And I don't know anything else but that. And move those schools. That's my expertise. I go into schools that are failing and move them. So I didn't know anything else but that. So I would go into it, and I took it as a personal challenge, you know, because I feel like it doesn't matter where a person comes from, nor their social economic status, or who their mom or dad is. If they have a brain, I'm willing to work with it and make it succeed. And so in doing that, I saw that A-plus plan, I must say, at first, improve the quality of what was being taught in classrooms. But when they added the competition and began to put so much credence on those scores and more than they were on academic gains of the children and finding out what we need to improve. That's when the system went away.
Interesting.
Say, what is the demographic makeup of the district, Deborah? You're down there. You know it much better than I, and I think Gwen knows too, but I have no clue. What is it composed of economic-wise and all that sort of thing?
Well, in Polk County, which is mostly all of my district, I only have two cities in the county of Lake.
Mm-hmm.
But in Polk County, it is a poor district.
Okay.
Most of our children are impoverished. And you will have a great number of children who we call get government funding in our public schools and our charter schools. It's Title I. So that tells you our economic status in our area is not the best. However, we're finding that we have several colleges, but many of our college-educated students who come in, they get educated and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the initiatives in which I think we need to work on, improving not only the job skills, but maintaining and retaining those who get those skills.
Now, how in the world did a Republican capture that district? That blows me away. I mean, you just said it was redistricted recently?
Yes, but the new redistricting that the judges ordered, you know, with all of this, it just recently, this year.
Okay.
That's
all right.
How I
this
got
okay.
in the race, because before then, I wasn't in her district.
Oh, I see.
This
okay.
That
might play into your hands, too. Let's hope.
I'm sorry. This was then consequences of the gerrymandering that had gone on
that's,
for so long, and not
that's
only
correct.
Florida, but many states. Okay.
That's
so,
correct.
Well, that could prove to be a favorable aspect, too, for you, Deborah. Let's hope, huh?
Yeah, well, I am. Everything, in my opinion, is very favorable. I'm an optimistic person, but at the same extent, I don't go into something unless I go in to win it. And I go in with the attitude that
good.
I've looked at all of the data to prove this is something we can do. And it can
good
make a difference not only in Polk County, but the state of Florida. Because
the
rules that she has come through, that she's put on the floor and passed, have an effect on all the children in the state of Florida.
That's right.
Have there been any polls taken to see where you two are at in the race?
No, not yet.
But you don't have any
primary.
We're
not going
challenger.
To be in a primary because it's just the two of us.
Right, okay.
Really
well,
don't. And we've got a lot of stuff going on with primary, so everybody's focusing on the primary. And
right.
I have been cautious not to be out there a whole lot because I don't want people to lose sight that the only time they're going to be able to vote for me is November the 8th.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Can I ask you a question, Deborah? Have you buddied up at all with any of the I guess the only one over in your area that would be considered your side of the street politically would be Alan Grayson, isn't that he's a congressman now, but he's giving it up.
Yeah, right. I have met Alan Grayson on other occasions since he's been busy with his race. I have not been in his presence. But I do sort of understand some of his issues and how he stands from his past conversations with me at other times. But I have not butted up, no. As I said earlier, because of the primary, people are so focused on that. They don't really want to deal with me because I don't have a primary. Mm. And so they're trying to deal. And I understand I would be the same way, first things first. You know, let's get the primary and then we move on to.
Let's get race one, then we can start.
Right,
I
right.
I understand that.
I do, too.
So
are the Republicans going to throw all kinds of money against you? Do you have any indication that's going to happen?
Yes, I'm sure of that. She's
okay.
already had, you know, she has quite a bounty of money sitting there. But I feel, as I keep saying to people, I realize I need to fundraise. I need assistance financially. But at the same extent, I also need people to get up and vote because that's what's going to make a difference on November the 8th.
Okay.
That's
and
that's very funny,
but
very
money
crucial.
Doesn't buy the votes. It's the people
right.
getting up and
no,
making it happen.
No,
right.
what money buys you right now is presence in the voter's mind, who they know
right.
who you are because you
well,
get out there.
Yeah.
And
it's
that's
the marketing
why I
and advertising
asked you,
of the candidate getting the message out.
That is why I asked you who you buddied up with, because there are
down-ticket
funds.
I've spent some time with the people who are in the area working on Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And
we
know each other quite well. And they're very busy right now with voter registration. And of course that can work in my favor too. So I don't turn away anybody help or association that I feel, and I'm trying to be very visible in the community and making it knowledgeable to people when they can vote and where to vote. Because, of course, with the redistricting, there's a lot of people going to be confused. So I'm hoping all of that settles at primary.
Yeah, good point.
And then by primary, after primary, it's going to be on.
Okay, good.
When is the primary?
You know what? It's in August.
Okay.
I think it's the 1st of August. I can't remember the exact date because that's not in my mind. My mind is November the 8th.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's in
August. I wanted to bring this up too. That another thing I noticed in the state of Florida, we have a lot of senior citizens, and healthcare accessibility is to me not where it needs to be. This is a service. This is a service state. Most of the people in the state of Florida perform some kind of service, and we need to make it much more accessible in the healthcare industry for the elderly. Because as I age and go into some of these facilities and places and sit and see the convoluted procedural things that people have to go through in order just to get care. If you don't have a healthcare advocate or someone who can help you, you can get lost quickly. So I think that's one of my issues that I really want to work on, trying to make healthcare issues more accessible to the elderly.
Great.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
That's
so important.
That's why I asked about demographics, what your district was composed of, not only economically but age-wise and all strata, you know, because it all can play into your favor.
Yeah, well, that's my goal in regards to working with the young, and I want to see the state of Florida go to universal pre-K, where we don't have this early.
Oh, yes.
PK, where it's a half day, and if mom is too lazy to get up in half of the day and go get you, you don't get preschool till you walk in there, and it's required. I want to see the state of Florida. If we want to see the change that they say they want to, then we need to go to universal pre-K for 4-year-olds and put them all in school.
Yeah,
you need to stick with the Hillary Clinton team because they are can-do people, especially for children in education. There's a lot of folks in her campsite that have a lot of experience.
I certainly agree with a lot of things, even making college more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten ridiculous.
Amen.
I mean, if I had to educate a child now, I don't know what I would do.
Sure.
Because
very
costly.
I have said many times in my writings and also on this show here, the true wealth of a nation is based on an educated workforce.
Right.
Yeah, you can have, you know, coal and you can have gas and you can have this, but the true wealth of a nation is an educated workforce that can take those raw materials and do the value-added aspects to it to market it then on the rest of the world economy. That's where
good
your
point,
true
Wayne.
Wealth is.
Good point.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Well, and there's also this, guys. I mean,
and you're welcome to use that if you
like. You've noticed that the major, the Ivy League schools are putting their classes up online for free. You can audit these classes, I mean, from New England over to, you know, Stanford on the other side of the country. They're not giving you textbooks or anything, but everything is up online, included auditing classes online via video. And I think
You know what? I see that the impairment to that, and that's another one of my platform, making internet accessible to everyone.
Good
because
point.
You
yes.
may have it, Gwen, and I may have it, and the rest
yeah.
of us may have accessibility, but the average poor person may not
yeah.
have accessibility to, yeah. I go to the library a lot to sit and watch the people coming to the library facility to look for jobs and to fill out forms, and you can tell
yeah.
the people who went through school and got keyboarding.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the others who hunt and take all day.
That's one of Hillary Clinton's issues, or well, one of her policies, is to bring in computers and tablets that are ready for children, especially, and making, as President Obama did, one of his goals has been making internet something that is available to every family in all the cities, as well as just like electricity, wants to
yeah.
get it to that
well,
point.
And well,
it's
yeah, my platform says clearly that I want to increase the wireless hubs so that no one in the community is left behind.
There you
yeah.
go.
We can make
what we consider lesser dominant, I don't want to say third world countries because they're not that low, but their infrastructure for the internet is even far superior than what we have in ours.
I agree.
You know, we need to step up to a global competition.
Oh, yes. That's true. But it's all, you know what it's all stuck in? I'll tell you what it's stuck in. It's stuck in profit. That's where it's stuck.
That's true.
Then and you can, if you can bring accessibility to everyone in the community, think of how that'll transform our country.
Oh yes,
absolutely.
I mean,
I've been on this for some time. You know that I can see it growing as a need, and the children come to school, they get exposed to it. They go home to situations where it may not be available. And, you know, we've gotten so biased, and I don't know if you know, in the state of Florida, in order to get the Bright Futures Scholarship, they will now have to apply for FAFSA, which is that Florida assessment for in order to find out what you financially what you qualify for.
Yeah,
so it used to be just, it was all academic. Now the people are going to have to go online and do a FAFSA. Well, half of the kids, some of those are living with grandparents, and some of those grandparents don't have access to computers.
Oh, right.
So
oh, yeah. Well,
they cut down on the numbers real quick with Bright Futures.
And the county back home in Maryland where my home is, I'm here in Columbus, Ohio, doing consulting engineering. There are many people in that county that don't even have the regular hand telephone of days of old.
Wow.
Much less, cell phones or even, wire-based internet. It's just not
mm-hmm.
there. They can't afford the telephone bill, much
mm-hmm.
less be able to go out and buy a computer to get on the internet.
Right.
That's why the education system is so important and vital. It can offer children on an umbrella, a complete across the boards. You know, there are plenty of companies, I'm sure, that Bill Gates can be talked into a little quid pro quo to provide computers. You know, they can do it. They got the money, too. They could probably put
them in. Bill Gates is very philanthropic in that aspect, too. I would give him his proffers.
Every elementary school in the country. for the children who can't afford it on their own, to supplement them for it. And the grid really does have to be built, as Deborah says, to service the complete community with an access that is just, you know, you have to be able to safeguard your own computer system, but you don't have to safeguard the server that's going to be brought through a government access. Well, then again,
What is the major industry or industries that are in your district there? What employs the most amount of people? Is it primarily agricultural, or is it 50-50, or what is it?
No, it used to be citrus, but we have had so many problems with the citrus. We don't have the economic growth that we used to have from citrus. One of our main industries in Lakeland is public market. You know, you heard of public stores?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Lakeland is the home of Publix. Mr. George
Jenkins. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, okay.
Mr. George Jenkins is Publix in Lakeland. I'm a native Lakelander and a native Polkownian, so I know all the history of Publix. And so that's one of the major industries for employment. Then we have the school system is a large employer. We have the hospital, which is a large employer. So you've got several different entities within the community that can substantiate the employment. But you've got a lot of immigrants coming in and diversity, where I can tell you this from my own personal experience. When I graduated from college, I got a minor in Spanish. I was so good in the Spanish. And at the time when I graduated, the Cubans were coming into Miami, and I used to do all of the interpreting for the college Spanish ability, home to Polk County, speaking Spanish. And I lost all my capabilities for lack of conversation. It's dire need. We are, as a matter of fact, the minority group is and the next largest group, the Hispanics. You know, we are growing exponentially in the area of Latinos. Need for Spanish in our community is just absolutely necessary. So we see diversity. We have a lot of Haitians moving into our area. Very, very. And we see between Orlando and Tampa. So we have a lot of the service workers for Disney.
Oh, my. Okay.
Because the cost of living is much less than Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
You drive from Polk County to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So those are some of the major industries. And then we have Legoland, which has recently moved into our area. You've got several different attractions that also hire people from this area. Legoland is located in Polk County, so they hire people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Got several different large, let's say the grocery business, Publix, has the largest, one of the larger employers.
I'm getting kind of a feedback every time you speak, Deborah. I don't know what it's caused by, but seems like every time you speak, there's an echo of your what you just said. Do you folks hear that too?
It's going in and out. Deborah, is your signal on your phone strong or?
Well, I'm on a landline. I didn't use my cell phone.
Oh, okay. So it's our Blog Talk Radio people again.
Well, there we go.
I do apologize. I think
I could hear you fine, but I had to struggle sometimes.
Well, it's going. I hear the same thing from y'all conversation to me.
Okay.
Oh goodness. Well, we'll have to replay that and see how that goes. But I think it'll be fine. Usually it comes.
You sound
up,
fine, Gwen. I don't hear any echo on you, but everybody else gets it.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm getting an echo.
You are?
Yeah, I'm getting an echo too from both of Deb and Jack. You aren't echoing.
Sometimes, I'm on a landline too.
Yeah, I know you are, Jack.
I'm just saying. Am I echoing with you guys?
Not at all.
No.
Okay.
And neither is Gwen. So it's weird.
It is. It's inner tubes.
So Deborah, thanks for letting us know a little bit about the makeup of your district, economically and job-wise and all that sort of thing. Do you have specific programs that you are offering or that you'd like to introduce to help some of those groups?
Well, one of my chief concerns, and again, because my passion is education, is that we're not doing an adequate job in attracting and retaining teachers. With that being that's my heart's passion. If we don't, in the next couple of years, we're going to be at a extreme crisis. Because there are not enough people going into education. We've put so many stringent requirements on them, and then we got all this testing stuff that we're driving people away, and therefore we're not going to have adequate enough coverage in the school.
Right.
I hear
well,
you.
Jeff, let me interject here. In Kansas, that governor is basically he's giving tax cuts to all the wealthy, and he's balancing, trying to balance the budget of the operating of Kansas on the back of the police officers, the firemen, and the teachers.
Wow.
And you're talking about disheartening a person in the classroom, knowing that their wages are being de-escalated, more students are coming into the classroom that they have to try to work with, and the whole demographic is just totally skewed in the wrong direction in Kansas. Kansas is
That's your modern-day Republicans in action.
There you go.
That's really
well.
Close.
You know, when I was recently talking to, because I've been going forth in front of these different groups for their endorsement, I've gotten the FEA, which is the Florida Education Association, their
Great.
Endorsement. I've got the AFL-CIO endorsement for the state of Florida, which is over 500,000 workers.
That's beautiful.
And that's one of the things that I'm talking about. We cannot. We're a service community. This whole state is. And we've got to take care of those people who service the people.
Yes.
And that's our teachers, our firemen, our policemen, all of our union workers. We got to take care of these people because we cannot do it without them. They keep this state moving.
Yeah. Well, it's the structure of society.
Yes. Yes.
I'm very supportive of that. My nephew is a first responder. He's graduated the fire academy, and in August he'll graduate from paramedic. He could have gone over to Europe and played football, but he came home to serve the community. I'm so proud.
Wonderful.
So proud.
Yeah. Well, I tell people all the time, just before Gwen, that as an educator, you think I'm pushing teachers. But let me tell you something, that when my air condition breaks at home, I'm not calling a teacher. I want somebody who specializes in air conditioning. Because, so I'm concerned about the tradesmen, the people with those specialized skills, keeping those people actively engaged and taking care of them financially and medically so that they will stay in these professions so that we will have them and sustain us.
And do you see the need for greater attention to trade schools?
Yes, I do, because I don't think everybody's designed to go to higher education. And as I said earlier, I don't think they all need to. When I go to get my car repaired, I want someone now who is a computer tech, because the cars hook up the computers now, you know, and the computer tells them what's wrong with the car. So,
that's
but
true.
I want someone who's skilled in that particular area.
And who
enjoys
doing it.
And so I don't think everybody needs to go to college for that.
And also, I find that trade people are craft people. They enjoy what they do if they're really good at it. They really enjoy what they do, whether it's a carpenter or it's a guy who's able to fix the tracking on your sliding glass door. You and I might know about that one, Deborah. That's a biggie. It's a guy who knows how to fix the siding on somebody's old house or something. You know, these things are not things that anybody can do. Mechanic, and there's so many different, but the trade schools, and I think we're going to need trade schools. I'd love to see trade schools for solar energy workers, solar panel makers.
I agree. I'm a great supporter. So we live in the state of Florida where sunshine is free.
I know, and what we could do with it, but the whole country can do with it. That's the industry we need to be involved in. And I think it's a trade school industry, isn't it? You would know better than any of us. Isn't that a trade school? Yeah, I think it is.
I think so, too.
Of course, Wayne's the engineer. I mean, we'd have to train people, wouldn't we, Wayne?
Well, absolutely, Glenn. And what I'd like to bring out is for my father taught industrial arts, drafting,
okay.
and wood shop. Okay, so I'm kind of I'm probably biased here. But for many years, especially in the 70s and even maybe the late 60s, the vocational aspects became the dumping ground for best-achieving students. You know, I was a tool and die machine, and whenever I hired a young guy coming out of high school to learn the machinist trade, one of the first things I had to do was start teaching him trig, because you have a sign, F-I-N-E, vice, and he had to understand the concept of tilting and getting the degree angle of the piece of work into the angle. Little things like that.
So there's really a call for trade schools and specifics that are
proper trade schools.
Yeah, and one of the big ones would be for a green all kinds of green industry. You know what they're doing in cities right now, guys? They are taking old parking complexes that are still sound, but are outmoded or aren't needed in the territory that they're in. And instead of demolitioning them, they're turning them into greenhouses. Did you know that? They're farming these things. They're growing crops in these. So, well, you got to sign up for GRIST, you know, emails, and pay attention to the green network, where they tell you that they're doing all these wonderful things in cities to bring. And did you know that people in large cosmopolitan areas can tend to be afraid of nature? That have been raised in.
They don't know it. They don't understand it. They don't live with it.
I don't understand that.
It's crazy.
I don't understand that.
But, you know, there has been a trend, an increasing trend, toward urban farming and things like that. And in the middle of big cities, they've carved out a spot where people can grow their own veggies and stuff. I mean, that is fabulous.
Bette Midler supports all of that very strongly in New York City, where I used to. I was a mate on a ferry boat in Boston in 2000, and where we used to dock at Long Wharf Pier, there was there were overpasses from. You know, that we're all outmoded from the big dig there. Uh-huh. And do you know what they did to those overpasses? They made them into parks.
Awesome.
And it's like when you're driving on the highways and you can see that there's crossovers of the highways for animals. You know, I don't know if you've seen that, but.
Yeah.
And there's a call for training for that kind of thing. For farming in urban communities, I mean, kids are coming up with, and it was all kids who came up with these ideas too.
It's part of what I've been writing about recently at my blog, the Saturday Afternoon Post, about the Next System project. It is just phenomenal what people are doing, different than the everyday thing. Much better alternatives, and there is an alternative. You're not trapped in the realm that you're in. So there is an answer, and it's out there.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Very good point.
It all does begin with how many of us remember a certain teacher who sparked our imagination, who made us
very
think
true.
That we could do
oh,
it,
absolutely.
That
absolutely.
We weren't alone, that we were all right, or that we were, you know, we had a gift that we would certainly find in life. And be
or that showed us how to learn. A lot of teachers don't do that.
Well, the teachers haven't been treated very well, especially in the public school system.
They need
to be honored. They need to be honored.
I speak firsthand on that one. I've seen it too often.
Right.
Yeah, and we don't pay them what they're worth. Their value is much greater than what they are paid.
Right.
And that needs to change too. It's where are you going to put your priorities? And we've got to take priority away from profit.
You sound like the ideal candidate for your district with your focus on education and aid to the elderly and job creation. I mean, those are powerful attributes that I think you should put into play big time, and I'm sure it will propel you into state office. Let's hope so.
I thank you very much, and I certainly, my wholehearted desire is to become a public servant in this capacity, because I always use the statement made by Enderman Wright, that she is one of my idols as far as advocating for children. And she says the service we pay for life is you know, the rent we pay for life is service.
Right.
Right.
The rent we pay for life is service. And I remember that all the time. And so as I go into this new season of years where – and I don't have to go into a school every day. And I've spent my whole entire life since I was 21 in a school in some capacity. I think that I bring something to the table that is much more valuable than just going in there saying, I think we ought to do it. I can come in and say, I know we need to do this.
Yeah, you're getting your hands
on
it.
We don't need to go back to the past.
The knowledge, the intimate knowledge of what it takes to educate our children, not some Republican chosen because her husband had the office.
Right.
Well, and Deborah, I have to tell you, I always thought, because I heard him say it a few times, I always thought that quote was attributed to Muhammad Ali.
No, that's Marie. In the middle, right?
I just got educated. Mm-hmm. I just got educated.
Mm-hmm.
We're losing a lot of folks too. When that's,
yes, we
that's
are.
Something. A lot of elders are crossing, and it's an opening. It's a time, and we all need to step up to the plate. I know from what I do and what I've done for 20 years, basically service is. It's what heals you. It's what makes life. So that's incredibly a great tagline, especially to use for your campaign. That's pretty wonderful.
Thanks. Well, I have spent my whole life in service. You know, I might have been paid, but you know, and I know that the life of a teacher, from a classroom teacher, I was a music teacher, a classroom teacher, a special reading teacher, a resource teacher, from all kinds of different teaching capacities, that you always put in more time than you pay for. And I agree with the commentary that we need to honor our teachers more. We need to add the respect back to the classroom. And
Agreed.
The respect starts first with how you pay them and then how you treat them.
Yes, absolutely. Can I ask you, Deborah, how many children's lives do you think, just any guesstimate, how many children's lives do you think you've touched in this life?
It's interesting you ask me that, because I thought about that the other day driving along the road. Because spending, and it's seriously, I've been in the school system over 35 years in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, if you would say the average school was 700 kids.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
That's
so
a lot of kids.
Thousands of children.
Yes, and from diverse situations. And many times they didn't look nothing like me. And many times I culturally was just enriched by the things that I was exposed to. And as I said, I've had a wonderful, wonderful career in school because I've seen it all.
Well, you know, teachers, I mean, I go out and I do that myself. Mm-hmm. I teach seminars and such. And I've always considered that I learn more from the people who come to take classes from me with their questions and their interests and their ideas and asking me questions than I ever learned. You know, it's like autodidactic there, you know.
Yeah.
You
learn
so much more. So.
Well, you know, I think life is, we spend our whole life, if we want to stay on top of things, learning. I just left Friday. I went to a workshop, was in a workshop with teachers. I was learning about how to deal with kids with special needs. And, you know, because it refreshes. And when I left, I felt refreshed. I mean, wasn't a whole lot new I heard, but just hearing and having conversations with other practitioners and people out there in the trenches and encouraging them, it does my heart good.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. That conversation going back and forth is more enlightening than even spending time sometimes, and I'm an avid reader, spending time sitting in a book. But that conversation that takes between two human beings or three or four human beings is just so enlightening.
Well, I can tell from what you've said, Deborah, you will be a very, very dedicated and good public servant. And that is the top-rate thing, and I think your district will be very lucky to have you serve them. And I sure hope you are successful. So that's my vote of confidence for you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We will have Deborah back on before the election so she
Great.
Gets something more to put out there with the archive shows and the radio broadcast.
This lady
needs to be elected,
Gwen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's fortunate to find out. I'm working downstate. She's upstate. She's in Mickey's territory. I'm down here with the pirates, okay? But you got all my energy. You got all my energy.
Well,
I my prayers.
Well, thank you. You know, I went to school down there with the pirates, so the pirates trained me. How about that?
Oh, fantastic.
We certainly appreciate too that because I know we're at the top of the hour, we got to do our call letters out here, and I want you to tell people, Deborah, how they can find you to support you. Do you have a website or a phone number or anything that
I
you
do.
Can give out? Good.
I have a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/DWrightChoice. And then I have a web page, which is D, like in dog, D, right, W-R-I-G-H-T, choice.com. And on both of those sites, you can find all the information about where you can send donations and any information to keep you updated on my activities and what's going on. Even pictures posted.
Well, I certainly wish you all the best luck in the world. And anything that I can be helpful with or useful with, don't hesitate to reach out. You can probably find me quickest on Facebook.
Okay.
And you have my phone number, too.
Yes.
And Jack, it's your turn to sign us off again.
Well, I'm urging everybody throughout Florida and throughout the entire country to keep pushing forward. Let's do it. Let's be victorious this November, and let's install a progressive wave into this country. It will benefit the entire country and the world. So let's keep pushing forward, everybody, and select the best candidates you can. Deborah is right as one of them. Please vote for her, everybody down there. It's applicable too. And I encourage everybody to do that. So all the best to everybody for a great 4th of July holiday.
Yeah,
thank you, Jack.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And Wayne, will you give them your call signals there?
Sure. I can be found at Minds and Times of F. Wayne Johnson. You'll see where I've had conversations in the higher echelon of the Republican Party with Jack Kemp. I explain a lot of things in my viewpoints, like the draft and turtle aspect. And anyway, well, very good. I want to thank everybody. Good night.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Wayne.
Bye bye, Jack. Deb, good luck to you, hon.
Thank
yeah.
you so much.
Good luck.
Yes, thank
best
you.
Best
thank
of
you,
luck.
Gwen, and thank you, Deb. It's been a real joy this week, and we'll look forward to the next time.
Remember, you can't go wrong with right.
you can't go wrong with right. I love
slogan.
It.
That's a great slogan. Use it.
Yes, I am.
This has been the Sunday Show on Here Be Monsters Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Please, we won't be on next week. We will be enjoying America's birthday. And the best way you can do that this year is to vote for somebody sane. Okay, I'll just put it there. And she's really, really sane, believe me. Okay. Thank you. This is Gwen, and I'm signing us off. Oh, we did that one on time.